The Foundations of Law and Justice, Magna Carta. Genesis 12, verse 1 to 3, we read, I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. The Abrahamic covenant and blessing. Magna Carta has been one of the most valuable exports of Great Britain to the rest of the world. Magna Carta has truly blessed the nations, every nation on earth. Magna Carta was the first statute, the first written restriction on the powers of government. Magna Carta, sealed by King John at Runnymede, 15th of June 2015, recognized foundational scriptural principles. Justice must not be sold. Justice must not be delayed. Justice must not be denied. Justice delayed is justice denied. No taxes may be levied without the consent of the representatives of the class of people being taxed. You can't have one class determining what another class will pay. It's something each class and each municipality has to agree to through their representatives for it to be a legal tax. The American War of Independence was rallied by the cry, no taxation without representation. I don't know if they're very happy with the taxation they've got with representation right now, but the principle is a good one. No one may be imprisoned without a fair trial by a jury of their peers. Again, you should not be able to have it that a military man's being judged by a bunch of pacifist civilians, for example. It isn't right that an animal rights activist is being judged by a bunch of hunters, and you know, so on. You've got to have a jury of their peers. And the principle was that the clergy should be judged by the clergy and the military by the military and so on. Property must not be taken away from any owner without just compensation. This sort of rings a bell somewhere. The people talking about expropriation without compensation somewhere these days. Anyway, that would be a violation of Magna Carta, for example. Magna Carta is recognized as the grandfather of all bills of rights. So, not that I particularly think our Bill of Rights in South Africa is tremendous or wonderful, but insofar as it has good principles in it, it's thanks to Magna Carta. The good that's in our Bill of Rights comes from Magna Carta. Magna Carta was the inspiration for the Glorious Revolution of 1688. Why is it called the Glorious Revolution? No one died in it, unlike the 1789 French Revolution, French Revolution. The Glorious Revolution was a bloodless revolution, a revolution where William and Mary were called to save England from the wicked Catholic apostate, James II, and they managed to take England and immediately following it with the English Bill of Rights. Now, I've heard historians say, the American Bill of Rights was the first Bill of Rights in the history of the world. Not even close. I've heard people say, Britain has never had a constitution, Britain has never had a Bill of Rights. Nope, wrong on both counts. Magna Carta was the foundational model for the English Bill of Rights of 1689. And by the way, the English Bill of Rights of 1689 includes details that excluded, for example, Edward VIII from being King of England because he married a divorcee. The fact that she was an American divorcee made it worse, of course, but the fact is, the English king could not marry a divorcee, nor could marry a Catholic, for example. I mean, these are some of the things in an English Bill of Rights. And you would think that would exclude King Charles, Prince Charles, on two accounts right there. But in fact, it prevents him on a third count. He's got to be a defender of the Protestant faith. And Charles has said that he wants to change the oath of office to defender of faiths, because he's now patron of the Muslims and things like that too. So there we go, strike three, and he should be out. And of course, Magna Carta is the foundation for the Bill of Rights of the United States of America. Lord Denning described Magna Carta as the greatest constitutional document of all times, the foundation of the freedom of the individual against the arbitrary authority of the despot. During the greatest century of Reformation, the 16th century, there was a tremendous upsurge of interest in Magna Carta. Strenuous efforts were made to apply these biblical principles of justice and freedom into all areas of life. And this was most effectively done in the Westminster Catechism, the Westminster Confession, Westminster Standards, which are the foundations of Presbyterian churches and Baptist churches too, the Baptist Confession of 1689, for example. Magna Carta is an important symbol of liberty today. It is greatly respected worldwide by both historians and lawyers as a potent foundational document for the protection of personal liberties. Now, I've heard people say, oh, Magna Carta is a lot of rubbish, meant nothing. Well, look at the facts. It has been described as one of the most important legal documents in history. Well, that's not saying much. I'd say it is the most important legal document in history. Do you know, one single copy of Magna Carta was sold for something in the region of £30 million a while ago. Now, I can't think of any piece of paper that, not that it's made of paper, it's made of calf leather, it's vellum, but still, that can compare with that. Could be one of the most valuable documents in history. Why is that? Proverbs 23 verse 10 says, do not remove the ancient landmark. The Archbishop of Canterbury, Stephen Langton, a Bible-believing, God-fearing man, wrote Magna Carta, which declares, John, by the grace of God, King of England, know ye that we, in the presence of God, and for the salvation of our soul, and the souls of our ancestors, and heirs, and unto the honor of God, and the advancement of the Holy Church, and amendment of our realm, by this present charter confirmed for us and our heirs forever, that the Church of England shall be free and have her whole rights and her liberties inviolable. The Bible was clearly recognized as the foundational authority for Magna Carta. By the way, you may notice I say Magna Carta. Americans will say the Magna Carta. The English will traditionally say Magna Carta. It's just a matter of whether you've studied Latin or not. It doesn't need a the in front of it. It is Magna Carta. You shall do no injustice in judgment. You shall not be partial to the poor, nor honor the person of the mighty. In righteousness you shall judge your neighbor. I had the privilege of going to the Royal Courts of Justice when I was in England in 2014. And what did I see? Interesting. They have a monument to Moses, of course, the ultimate lawgiver. And King Solomon, author of the Proverbs, which has many legal principles in it. A statue to Jesus, not that we go for statues to Jesus, but there we go. And Alfred the Great, very important to have King Alfred the Great, the author of the Dunes, the common law. Why is it called the common law? It was common to all classes and all people in England. Proverbs 14:34 says, righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a disgrace to any people. Magna Carta established the right to trial by jury of your peers, to protect the accused from capricious condemnation by authorities. The sheriff can't just arrest you. The king can't just arrest you. The various lords and barons do not have the right to deprive you of life, liberty, or of your freedom of movement without being tried in a court of law. The high value that Christianity, from its inception, has placed upon the individual. Now, of course, the community is important, but Christianity has more emphasis on the individual than any other religion on earth. Other religions are very much group-orientated, but Christianity is very concerned with individual importance and rights. It is in stark contrast to the ancient Egyptian civilization, in which the individual was always subordinate to the state. Just think how big their slave armies were and how many poor slaves it took to build a pyramid, for example. And in stark contrast to ancient Babylonian culture, just built upon slavery, and everyone's rights were subservient to that of the king and those under him. And people's lives could be taken at a whim from just the king is the law, the king's word is law, and there's no appeal. And the Persian Empire, also very capricious. As for the Chinese, well, you don't even want to talk about Chinese torture. It's called Chinese torture for good reason. And the Greeks, who meant to have been so great, but they... People were forced to take poison themselves as judgment from the court, and all sorts of things took place. People would be thrown off cliffs. The Spartans would cheerfully throw vast amounts of baby boys over the cliff because they were imperfect. They wanted perfect specimens. In fact, this is one reason why Sparta died in the end. They might have had the greatest warriors for a time, but they went from a high point of having an army of 10,000 men down to less than 1,000 because they were rejecting so many boys that in the end, the Thebans beat them in battle because the Thebans could mobilize 30,000 against the 1,000 Spartans, and it didn't matter how good their soldiers were, they were just overwhelmed because they'd been practicing infanticide on an industrial scale. More baby boys were thrown off the cliff than were actually allowed to live. A society that kills its own children is damned and doomed. And the Roman culture, which, you know, don't just think of gladiatorial sports. Remember, crucifixion on an industrial scale. The individual was always subordinate to the state. And the fact that Christ could be crucified, even after the Roman magistrate had declared him innocent three times, just showed what a capricious law system the Roman law is. And people who want to glamorize the Greek and Roman law obviously don't understand just how entrenched slavery and oppression of women and the lack of rights for most of the people in the society and how they could just do arbitrary executions and tortures. Not to mention torturing people for refusing to renounce their Christian faith. Think of people like Perpetua and others. If you don't burn incense in front of an idol of Rome, you will be fed to the lions or other wild beasts. So when you look at these ancient pagan cultures, death, lack of respect for individuals, ripping out of beating hearts by the Mayan civilization, for example, to make the sunrise tomorrow. All of this, which was actually pretty well depicted by Mel Gibson's Apocalypto movie, these were harsh cultures without any respect for life, liberty, or, as in the case of the Inquisition, so on, you could see how you're guilty until proven innocent, but you're not really given a chance to prove innocent. And this is the reality of life outside of the law of God. The Kali cult, where they slaughtered right up to, it's even happening today in India. The Kali cult is still murdering people and infants. True liberty, individual rights, and respect for human personality found no place in ancient or pagan societies. It was the Christian emphasis on the rights of the individual that established the freedoms and rights enshrined in Magna Carta of 1215 and the later English Petition of Rights of 1628, which was presented to King Charles I, which led to dismiss Parliament for 11 years, which led to the English Civil War, which led to Oliver Cromwell and a lot of positions that we now have today, as where it's taken for granted that the king or the monarch of a society has to rule in accordance with the constitution and the people elect their rulers. And you can have a monarchy, but it must be a constitutional monarchy. And these are principles that were won. And it came from spurning the English Petition of Rights of 1628 and led to the English Bill of Rights of 1689 and then the American Bill of Rights of 1791 and the others that followed. Sir Edward Coke, Chief Justice of the Court of Common Pleas, challenged King James I that Magna Carta gave the courts of common law the right to provide justice from the highest to the lowest, because the king is under God and under law. This is an inversion of, up till then, the whole ethos of law throughout the world was rex lex. Rex king, lex law, rex lex, the king is law. The king is the law, the king's word is law. Or as Louis XIV says, I am France and France is me. How arrogant is that? And so the reformers said, no, it's lex rex, the law is king. King is under the law. John 19, verse 11, our Lord Jesus Christ declared to Pontius Pilate, the Roman governor, you would have no authority over me unless it was given to you from above. All authority is delegated by God, and all authority is answerable to God. Dr. Alvin Smith, in his excellent book, How Christianity Changed the World, documents that the freedoms and liberties expressed in the Bills of Rights and the Declarations of Independence are extensions of Magna Carta, which is thoroughly Christian. Civil freedoms and liberties could not have occurred had it not been for the Christian values that prompted and shaped the formation of all these documents, all of which are extensions of Magna Carta. Magna Carta did not grow out of Islam, or Buddhism, or Hinduism, or animism, or secular humanism. It could not. Magna Carta is a thoroughly Christian document. Magna Carta is revered throughout the world as the cornerstone, not a cornerstone, the cornerstone of modern freedom. Now, I'm quoting now from historians and lawyers alike. That's why we have this facsimile laminated on the door of our boardroom downstairs. And we have an example of Magna Carta on the wall, our Reformation wall, just as you go down the Reformation hallway heading towards the kitchen. Magna Carta is super important. Sir Winston Churchill noted in his History of the English-Speaking Peoples that the rights and liberties of the English speakers owes more to the vices of King John than the virtues of any man. That's a very clever phrase, but what is he talking about? King John was one of the worst kings that England ever had. He and Bloody Mary, Mary Tudor, who burned hundreds of Protestants at the stake, must vie for who's the worst monarch of England. I mean, is it John the worst or Mary the first? But they really were bad. And John the first, well, I don't know that anyone's going to have a John the second. Although I'm amazed to think that any monarch of England named a child Charles after the Charles the first and Charles second were such bad kings as well, I must say. But anyway, let me not go off on a tangent here. John's cruelty and capriciousness drove the barons of England to mobilize and compel King John to sign the statement which Archbishop Stephen Langton authored, Magna Carta or the Great Charter. Now, his elder brother, Richard the Lionheart, nobody would have asked Richard to sign such a law, because Richard was loved, he was respected, he was a great hero of the Crusades. Richard the Lionheart had traveled to the Holy Land, he'd been involved in this incredible Third Crusade. He was so respected, even by his enemies, even to this day, the Muslims respect Richard Coeur de Lion, the Lionhearted. He was charged with 200 knights into thousands of a Muslim cavalry and win. I mean, Richard Lionheart was so powerful, so courageous. He spent less than 4 months of his 11-year reign in England. Most time he spent out there fighting Saracens. And the people of England so respect and revere King Richard, that nobody would have, here he comes back to England and his wicked brother John is bowing, pleading forgiveness because he'd so misruled the reign under the time that Richard was overseas. There are monuments to King Richard the Lionheart all over England, and he is one of only two monuments within the grounds of the House of Commons and the House of Lords, which is known as the Palace of Westminster in England, and one's to Oliver Cromwell, the other's to Richard the Lionheart. Now, Richard the Lionheart's banner, this is his flag that he used in the Crusades, became the flag of England. That's how much the people of England respect and love Richard the Lionheart. You can understand why there's jihadists today and other anti-Christians who want England to change its flag. But I mean, this flag has flown for, what, over 800 years in England? So outside the Palace of Westminster, you get this very imposing monument to King Richard the Lionhearted. And you can just get some of the spirit of this man and why he's so respected and revered. That's why Sir Winston Churchill could say, the liberties of the English speakers of the world owes more to the vices of King John than to the virtues of any man, because nobody would have forced a Richard the Lionheart to sign Magna Carta. It was this low-life, reprehensible, degenerate John who forced the barons to get out of their comfort zone and to compel the king at the point of the sword to sign this document which laid out what liberty should be, because he was violating all of it. Richard sadly died from a crossbow bolt and while besieging a castle in France. And interestingly, he expressly forbade them to take any revenge on the young boy who was wielding the crossbow. Said, you know, it was a lucky shot and fortunes of war. And before he died, he pardoned the young boy and forbade his men to take any revenge on him, which is very different from how modern Hollywood depicts that. But anyway, Richard is buried in France, actually, and his wicked brother John became King of England, and he immediately pleaded for all sorts of things from the Pope of Rome and made England the legate of Rome, and literally laid the crown of England at the foot of the papal legate, and made England effectively a colony of the Vatican, that the Pope had jurisdiction, that the King of England was nothing but a lackey for the Pope. And so much so that when they brought the bags and bags of gold and silver to the papal legate, the papal legate stomped on him underfoot to show his contempt for the people of England. To think that a king of England could be so low. Well, all of this formed the backdrop to a legendary, somewhat mythical figure, but there's a lot of fact that there was a Sir Robert of Locksley that the legends of Robin Hood have all been built around. And this is because under John, it was so bad that good people were driven to banditry and living in the forest and trying to, because they couldn't survive under the taxes of John, and they were literally robbing the taxman and giving it back to people that had been stolen from. That much is true. Of course, there's been lots of Hollywood embellishment. I might say that this 1939 version of Robin Hood is absolutely superb. It's a really, truly excellent film. Well, the people of England gathered and the Archbishop of Canterbury united the people and the barons to rebel against King John's oppression. So the timeline is the French invaded Normandy in 1204. There's a Battle of Bouvines in 1214. In May 1215, the Army of God formed, that's the barons, formed under the Archbishop of Canterbury to deal with the cursed King John. And 15th of June 1215, Magna Carta was agreed. The French then invaded England in May 1216, and they failed. And King John died in 1216. Interesting, I've heard many people say the last invasion of England was 1066. It's the last successful invasion of England. There were other invasions. But this is the background to Magna Carta. And King John here, you can see in all these pictures, the Archbishop has got a key role to play. And you can see the king on a dais, the Archbishop's always somewhere being depicted there because it's his work. Here again, you can see the Archbishop depicted just behind. So there's always the common theme. The churchmen and the military men are working together to force the king to agree to biblical principles of law and justice. And again and again, you can see the principles here. Again, they might depict them differently, but you see the churchmen and the military men working together. Even here as well, you again see the Archbishop in official regalia just behind the king, basically forcing him to do what's got to be done. In this depiction, you can see a very haggard, unhappy-looking John being forced by the barons, sign or else. And in this tapestry, you can see the Archbishop putting his finger right where you have to sign, and again, military men standing around. Here again, there's the common theme. The Archbishop and other bishops, the military men, and John does not look very happy about this, but I think they've depicted here the compulsion. And here a very old-looking King John, warily. He's been trying to avoid this, but he's been cornered. And Magna Carta, in Latin, with a king seal. Immediately after signing it, he tried to revoke it, and he tried to get the Pope to annul it. And to show you God's judgment on him, he was fleeing from the barons, who, by the way, in the Magna Carta states that if the king or any of his officers fail to adhere to this, the barons have the duty to resist them with force. And he signed and agreed to that. And those principles are written into, for example, the Scots Confession song, that the lords of the congregation of Scotland have the duty, not just the right, the duty to oppose tyranny, which is what got reflected in the American War of Independence, that resistance to tyrants is obedience to God. Here all the possessions and the crown jewels of King John got swept away in a sudden flood while he was fleeing from the barons in 1216. And he died of a heart attack or stroke at about that time. God's judge was on him in his 40s. The sealing of Magna Carta on 15 June 1215 was a splendid victory for all English-speaking people. It marked an end to the arbitrary power of any ruler to throw a man into prison without granting him an opportunity to prove his innocence. Magna Carta decrees that any man accused and arrested must be tried in a court of law, and if it cannot be proved that he's done wrong, he must be set free. Habeas corpus. corpus. You do not have the right to deprive a man of his liberty. He who justifies the wicked and he who condemns the just, both of them alike are an abomination to the Lord. How much clearer can that be? To let the wicked go free and to condemn the innocent is both alike hateful to God. No taxation is legal that is not authorized by those being taxed. And weights and measures must be standardized. You've heard how God hates a dealer with unjust weights and measures, with a bag of false weights in his pocket. These sort of things God hates because they steal. You shall do no injustice in judgment, in measurement of length, weight, or volume. You shall have honest scales, honest weights, an honest heifer, an honest hin. I am the Lord your God. Leviticus 19 is a chapter on holiness. Be holy because I, the Lord, am holy. And holiness is seen in economics, in measurement, in justice, in fairness. Do not cheat. And I'm afraid a lot of what's done in economics today is theft. And it's been proven many of the boxes you buy are, when you evaluate, it's less than what they claim in weight or volume or quantity. A lot of things are not the same quality. If you buy anything from China, it's going to break probably before you've got it home, before you use it for the first day. And the amount of theft going on, and in when it comes to things such as inflation, the theft going on is colossal. For I, the Lord, love justice. I hate robbery and iniquity. Which means God hates most of the banks and governments of this world, just right there. He hates robbery and iniquity. That's most of what, I'm afraid, our governments and economies are built on in many parts of the world today. Magna Carta required that a great council of nobles and bishops is to advise and guide the king in governing the country. This great council soon developed into the English Parliament, and you can see this is on the site of the present Palace of Westminster. Notice there's Westminster Abbey behind. So this is where the Palace of Westminster is today, but this is the Parliament then. Remember, Parliament did burn down back in the Victorian era, and they built a brand new one. And the Palace of Westminster, or the House of Commons and the House of Lords, is the model and the mother of all parliaments, an upper and a lower house, which is based on a biblical model too, of an elected lower house and a hereditary upper house. And this has been inspiration for many countries. Now, I don't know if you've noticed, but in the City Hall of Cape Town, have you noticed we've got the Big Ben clock in the tower, model of Big Ben, except ours is two-thirds the size of the one in England. And there's also modeled in Durban. If you go to Durban City Hall, they've also got a Big Ben type clock as well. So it's not just the clock, it's the concept of parliamentary law that is embodied here in the mother of parliaments. The right of a fair trial by a jury of your peers, the right of having a voice in the running of the government and in determining the taxes that are put to you, the right to a just and uniform standard of weights and measures for money and goods are just some of the many blessings which have flowed from Magna Carta. It may surprise you to know that for something like 250 years, English soldiers were paid a shilling a day, and they didn't have to change it because there was effectively no inflation for 250 years, and that's because they had a fixed standard and it was gold-backed currency, and so a loaf of bread cost the same a couple of hundred years later, and a soldier's salary hadn't changed in hundreds of years. When my father went into the 8th Army, he said the term was taking the king's shilling. Because the concept was you paid a shilling a day. Of course, a shilling used to buy a lot more than it does now. But the concept that righteous government, you don't have inflation. Do you know the Byzantine government, the Eastern Roman Empire, had for 800 years no inflation? 800 years, a loaf of bread, whatever it was, cost the same. By the way, Stephen Mitford Goodson, the economist, said in our Reformation Society meeting that back in biblical days, 2,000 years ago, to buy a Roman toga with a leather belt and leather sandals would cost one gold coin. And he said that today, if you want to buy a suit, shoes, and a belt, it's going to cost one gold coin. He said, in one sense, prices don't go up, prices don't change. He says, what happens is money is debased. Now, that's an interesting concept from an economist who was once director of the Southern Reserve Bank. he said that the price of things doesn't really change, but the currency gets debased, devalued. It's inflation, it's a hidden tax. I think that it takes a while to get your head around that, but that's an interesting concept. Amos 5, verse 15 declares, hate evil, love good, establish justice in the gate, let justice run down like water and righteousness like a mighty stream. The church in England played a central role in drafting Magna Carta. Look at this lovely monument. You can see the king in the middle, the archbishop on his right, and on his left there is the baron with a sword and shield. And so, again, you can see the church and the military working together to keep the king honest, in this case, a very wicked king. The church initiated the negotiations between the barons and the king, and at least 11 other bishops were present at the signing of Magna Carta. So that meant 12 bishops, including Archbishop Stephen Langton, who was the author of Magna Carta. Now, the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. 2 Corinthians 3, verse 17. Archbishop Stephen Langton strongly sympathized with the northern barons who openly rebelled against King John. By the way, you might be interested to know that the northern barons were overwhelmingly Vikings, the descendants of the Vikings. That's where York was established, and the whole of northern England was basically Viking territory. And so the northern barons were the first to take up the spear and the sword against the king for his outrageous abuses. The archbishop declared that if John refused to negotiate, he would excommunicate every man in the royal army. That's a pretty serious threat, because most people today don't seem to understand it, but excommunication, understood by a duly constituted authority, meant you will not go to heaven, you will go to hell. Practically, you won't be allowed to receive communion in the church, you won't be allowed to receive baptism, your children won't be allowed to receive baptism, you won't be married, you will not be buried. There's a whole lot of practical on earth sanctions, but then they claimed that they had the keys of the kingdom and could deny you access to heaven as well. So excommunication back in the Middle Ages brought serious fear. And of course, this power is normally abused through the Middle Ages, but on this occasion, it was probably justified. A group of barons met in St. Edmund's Abbey Church and swore an oath to compel King John to accept the Charter of Liberties, which was a proclamation of an earlier King Henry I. The barons advanced on London, where they were warmly welcomed. The Tower of London flung open the gates. I mean, there was no attempt at resistance. People in London were cheering in the streets. And by the time they pursued the king to Staines, see, from London to Staines, there's Windsor, and Runnymede is just between Staines and Windsor. Windsor Castle and so on. And by the time they pursued the king to Staines, Magna Carta included 63 demands that improved on the Charter of Liberties from Henry I. So on Monday the 15th of June, 1215, the barons confronted the king in a meadow named Runnymede on the south bank of the Thames River, halfway between Staines and Windsor. John agreed to the demands, but another 4 days were spent in hammering out the details of the wording, making copies of the document, which you understand, in the Middle Ages, when he said the copier is broken down, you meant the monk was crying, because the copier was not a machine, it was somebody who sat there writing. So, to make copies of the document, you need to find a monk who's skilled in calligraphy, and so it took a bit of time. Making a copy wasn't like run down to Kinko's sort of thing. So on Friday the 19th of June, John fixed the royal seal to Magna Carta. And this is what it looks like. I mean, that's the seal of John, and this is an original of Magna Carta, which is a single Latin text. At Runnymede, your rights were won at Runnymede. No freeman shall be fined or bound or dispossessed of freehold ground, except by lawful judgment found and passed upon him by his peers. Forget not, after all these years, the charter signed at Runnymede. Rudyard Kipling, the poet of England, the one who wrote, for example, The Jungle Book and a whole lot of other great books. A free man shall not be punished for a trivial offence, except in accordance with the degree of the offence. And for a serious offence, he shall be punished according to its gravity, yet saving always his livelihood. So, section 20, you're never to take away the livelihood of a person, even if he's committed a crime. And this is the site where Magna Carta was signed and sealed. And immediately you say, this doesn't look a very British symbol, that looks like the American star. It is. This monument was not set up by the British, it was set up by the Americans, by the American Bar Association. to commemorate Magna Carta, symbol of freedom under law. Now, why would the Americans be so interested in this? You can see set up by the American Bar Association on English soil, because to the Americans, Magna Carta is their birth certificate. This is the foundation of the Constitution Bill of Rights of America. And so the Americans, in some ways, were even more excited about Magna Carta than Englishmen. And here's at Runnymede, you get another monument to John. You can see his hand on the table, and you can see the barons or the knights standing with the banners and the sword and the shield, forcing him to sign. And he doesn't look particularly thrilled about it. Well, Pope Innocent III, and when you hear a pope called Innocent, you know he wasn't. It's like when you hear the word democratic in a country's name, like Democratic Republic of the Congo, or the Democratic People's Republic of China. You know that they're not. Or the Democrat Party, they're not either. Despite attempts by King John to violate his commitment and to get the Pope to support him, and the Pope Innocent III was obviously hostile to Magna Carta, because it's all about God's law. It's not about his statements. The legacy of liberty continued into the reign of John's young son. Henry III reissued Magna Carta in 1216. Upon the death of his father, he reissued a new version of Magna Carta, which was virtually the same. His son, Edward I, or Edward Longshanks, was heavily slandered in Braveheart, but the Scottish see Edward I as all bad, but Edward I was not all bad. He was a great crusader who killed a lot of Saracens, and he is the father of the English Parliament, and he did reissue Magna Carta in 1297, confirming it as part of England's statute law. So the Scots may hate him, but he did do a lot of good as far as English law goes. And in Worcester Cathedral, here you have the tomb of King John, and it's a very strange tomb. Not only it's very high, but notice he's got these creatures on his shoulder. He's got a demon on one shoulder, and he's got an angel on the other shoulder. Very Middle Ages idea, you know? Like you've got the demon shouting on this side, do bad, and you've got the angel on this side saying, no, 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 listen to your conscience. And so the idea is that John did the right thing when he signed Magna Carta, but did the wrong thing a lot of the other time. So it's just showing the duality of man. Very interesting, but this is a depiction of King John the Worst. During the time of the Reformation of the 16th century, there's an upsurge of interest in Magna Carta as lawyers and historians traced the principles of freedom to the Great Charter. And remember, Martin Luther was first trained as a lawyer before he became a theologian. And John Calvin was trained as a lawyer before he became a theologian. So there's a lot of interest in law in the Reformation. And they saw the principles of freedom in the Great Charter, and they applied it to biblically based laws. And these biblically based laws you could trace back to the times of the Anglo-Saxons, such as the dooms of King Alfred the Great at the end of the 9th century. The common law of England comes from it. And how did the dooms of King Alfred begin? I'm the Lord your God who brought you out of the house of bondage, out of the house of slavery in Egypt. You shall have no other gods before me. And the whole Ten Commandments, and the case laws of Exodus, and the Sermon on the Mount, and the golden rule of Christ. That's the beginning of the dooms of King Alfred. That's the beginning of the common law of England. It's rooted in the scripture, in Exodus, and in Matthew, and the Sermon on the Mount. And that's the root of common law of England. So when people want to come out with this whole thing of, you know, Roman and Greek law, and you don't want Roman and Greek law. You want biblical law. King Alfred the Great of England laid the foundations for the common law of England. Alfred began his dooms with the Ten Commandments, with the case laws of Exodus, and with the golden rule of Christ and other principles from the Sermon on the Mount. It is not good to show partiality in judgment. He who says to the wicked, you are righteous, him the peoples will curse, nations will abhor him. Proverbs 24. The principles of limited government and the foundations of individual liberty can be traced through King Alfred to the Bible. The law of God is the only effective foundation for freedom and justice. This is the rock. Building your life on a rock, you'll endure the storm. But otherwise, it's a sand of humanism. The Ten Commandments covers our responsibilities to God, our responsibilities to our parents, and our responsibility to other people. Every command deals with a specific area. The first command, God. Second, worship. Third, speech. Fourth, time. Fifth, authority. Sixth, life. Seventh, love. Ninth, No, eighth, property, ninth, truth, and the tenth deals with conscience. Each command includes a prohibition, and each command includes an implicit right. So you have the right to freedom of worship, and the right to know God's will to do it, and the right to freedom of speech. The only restriction on speech is don't take God's name in vain, don't bear false witness. But aside from those two restrictions, you've got freedom of speech. And then the right to work and to rest, and the respect for authority, and the right to life, and the sanctity of marriage, and private ownership of property, and the right to be protected from slander, and freedom of conscience. I mean, the only restriction on our conscience, God puts, is don't commit idolatry, and don't covet. So outside of those two small restrictions, you've got phenomenal freedom of conscience. And so you see that the Ten Commandments is the foundation of your rights, as well as your responsibilities. The second tablet of the law is summarized as do to others as you would want them to do to you. I mean, how simple is that? So, if you want a good society, how about following the second tablet of the law? Don't steal another man's life. Don't steal another man's wife. Don't steal another man's property. Don't steal his good name. Don't be jealous, envious of your neighbor. I mean, would that not solve most problems? So, for fast relief, take two tablets of the law. The law was our tutor, our schoolmaster, to bring us to Christ that we might be justified by faith. Galatians 3:24. Our Lord Jesus expressly affirmed the eternal validity of God's law. Do not think that I came to abolish the law or the prophets. I did not come to destroy but to fulfill. For assuredly I say to you, till heaven and earth pass away, not one jot or tittle will by any means pass on the law until all is fulfilled. Whoever therefore breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches men so will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does and teaches them, he shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. For I say to you that unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. Now honestly, how could the Lord make it any clearer that the law of God applies today? We will not be judged in eternity on the basis of the South African Constitution or the UN's declaration of whatever. Those are going to be irrelevant. You won't be able to say, well, you know, according to my country's... That's not going to wash in God's court. The law of the Lord is perfect. And you can't say that about any country's laws. The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. The statutes of the Lord are trustworthy, making wise the simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, giving light to the eyes. The commands of the Lord are radiant, giving light to the eyes. The precepts of the Lord are right, giving joy to the heart. Only the fear of God can produce lasting justice and righteousness in individuals, in families, in churches, and in nations. Only to the degree that people fear God and obey his commands can societies function for the good and freedom of all its citizens. Now, I love this beautiful painting in the Swiss Courts of Justice. The title is Justice Lifts the Nations. Now, Lady Justice in Europe always has her eyes wide open. For some reason, Lady Justice in America always is blindfolded. I personally wouldn't want someone wielding a sword who's blindfolded, but at any rate, I much prefer the European depiction of Lady Justice. Eyes are always wide open. She's holding the scales of justice, like the American Lady Justice, but she has a sword, which in America is normally pointed upwards. But here in Switzerland, at the Palace of Justice, it's pointed right down to a book that plainly says in the Holy Bible. Now the elders of the city are looking up to Lady Justice for the principles and precepts by which to deal with the different petitions and complaints that people have. They're coming in. You can see the sheriff is standing with his sword, his double-handed German broadsword, pointed downwards, and waiting to be told how to execute judgment here, and the people are pleading their cases. But they're looking to Lady Justice, who's weighing the evidence and pointing to the principles of the scripture with a drawn sword. And this is such a good depiction of justice and law, righteousness. Honest and hard work abound when God is feared. Sound economic practices flow from the fear of God. Blessed is the nation whose God is the Lord. Both James I and his son Charles I attempted to suppress the discussion of Magna Carta. This led to the English Civil War of the 1640s and the execution of Charles for high treason. Very radical, but a dramatic depiction of the principle of lex rex. The law is king. The king is under the law. This is the first time in history that a king was put on trial and executed after due process of law. Kings had been assassinated, murdered before, but never tried for treason and executed. It might be very disturbing to us, but this was a dramatic depiction of the principle that the kings are not above the law. And the fact that today in countries like America, they can put a president on trial, what they call impeachment, is another expression of the principle that the leader of a country is under the law. He's not above the law. There's a lot of countries that haven't picked that up yet. And so in the English Civil War, you have the most ghastly and radical depiction of this principle that the king is under the law. For which reason, when you go to Geneva, you may be surprised to see that in the Reformation War, obviously you'd expect to see John Calvin, John Knox, and Beza, and Farrell there, yes, sure. But here's Oliver Cromwell. Why is Oliver Cromwell there? Because he stood for the principles of Magna Carta, Lex Rex, the law is king, the king is under the law. And so, the one soldier in this Reformation War depicting 10 people who are part of the Reformation. Very interesting. The violation of the rights of Englishmen as outlined in Magna Carta led to the Glorious Revolution of 1688, which ousted the Catholic apostate James II. And they welcomed the Protestant William, who is a Huguenot, and Mary, who is the last of the Stuarts, but she was a Protestant, obviously. Mary, who was a Stuart, so she was she a niece? She was a niece of James II. But the rest of the Stuarts were apostate or Catholic, but she was a true Protestant. She was married to a Protestant prince in the Netherlands who was of Huguenot descent, and they were invited to come back and take the throne in England. Now, they actually gave the invitation only to Mary. Mary said she would not rule except with her husband, and so they had to extend the invitation to William and Mary, which is why throughout the English line you always get king, this, even queen. But the only time you get William and Mary, they're the only co-regents for that reason. A lot of good principles right there. And Queen Elizabeth authorized this tricentenary commemoration of 1689, the English Bill of Rights, which most English people are still unaware that there is an English Bill of Rights, but it does exist. And the crown, the date, the sceptre of Parliament, because it's a constitutional monarchy. The Queen rules, but she rules through her Parliament. And this is tricentenary of the Bill of Rights. Just in case, and I've heard so many English people saying, we don't have a Bill of Rights in England. Yes, you do. Read your history. Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. The colonists in the 13 colonies in North America protested the violation of their chartered rights as outlined in Magna Carta when Parliament failed to provide redress for their grievances. And I don't know how many people realize that primarily the protest of the American colonists was not against King George III, but against the British Parliament, who were denying them any representation, treating them like serfs, abusing them, giving them no representation, and making laws, overriding their own laws, taxing them, 4% tax. Can you imagine? How outrageous is that? Well, I think many people prefer 4% tax now, considering what they've got, but at that stage, people were outraged by 4% tax. And so they were actually protesting. When they mentioned King George, it was because George was failing to restrain Parliament, but the English Parliament was oppressing American colonists. I mean, it's just the fact. In 1687, William Penn, after whom Pennsylvania's named, published the excellent Privilege of Liberty and Property, being the birthright of freeborn subjects of England, and in this it contained the first copy of Magna Carta printed on American soil. Men must be governed by God, or they will be ruled by tyrants. And don't we see that in South Africa? People did not want to live under godly rule. They didn't like Christian law. People were whinging and whining about Sabbath protection laws, and you're not allowed to have abortions, and you can't have pornography, and you've got censorship of blasphemy, and you can't have gambling, and we've got to travel to other places to gamble and to abort our babies and give us freedom. And once they got it, yep, you don't want to be governed by God, you will be ruled by tyrants. How do you like freedom? Well, it's not freedom, of course. Right is right, even if everyone is against it. And wrong is wrong, even if everyone is for it. Is that not true? Penn's comments reflected those of Koch's that Magna Carta is fundamental law. The American colonist quoted extensively from Magna Carta concerning the rights to trial by jury and habeas corpus, which was being violated by the English government at that time. The American founding fathers declared that their constitution was to preserve their rights and their liberties as enshrined in Magna Carta. Their chartered rights as Englishmen overseas were being trampled on and violated. And Magna Carta was a rallying cry for the American War of Independence. In the time of Ronald Reagan, 1980s, this oak tree, planted with soil from Jamestown, Virginia, the first permanent English settlement in New World, commemorates the bicentenary of the Constitution of the United States. It stands in acknowledgement that the ideals of liberty and justice embodied in the Constitution trace the lineage through institutions of English law to Magna Carta. Well, they say the Magna Carta, sealed at Runnymede on June 15th, 1215, planted December 2nd, 1987, by John Marsh, Secretary of the Army of the United States of America. Interesting. The Americans know Magna Carta is the soil in which the American Constitution grew. Magna Carta is, in fact, the foundation for the American Constitution and for all bills of rights. The American founding fathers claimed Magna Carta as foundational for the American Constitution of 1789, which became the supreme law of the land in their country. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of laws. This is Magna Carta, straight. And so American homeschoolers can purchase books like this on Magna Carta, the Magna Carta Constitution, the cornerstone of the Constitution. In 1976, Britain lent one of the four surviving originals of the 1215 Magna Carta to the United States for the bicentennial celebrations, and also donated an ornate case to display it. Very ornate case. A replica is still on display in the United States Capitol crypt in Washington, D.C., and it looks like the original to me. William Stubbins' Constitutional History of England, published in the 1870s, he documented that Magna Carta was a major step in shaping the English people as a nation governed by laws under God. The British dominions of Australia, New Zealand, Canada, Southern Rhodesia, Union of South Africa all regarded Magna Carta as foundational for our laws and sought to model their constitutions on its provisions. Canada may have forgotten, but Magna Carta is the foundation for their parliament. Magna Carta, a 1297 King Edward I version, is at Parliament House in Canberra in Australia. Four exemplifications of the original 1214 Magna Carta remain in existence and are held by the British Library and the cathedrals of Lincoln and Salisbury. And here you can see in these cathedrals, one of the most precious possessions is an example of Magna Carta. This is Salisbury. I think it's the tallest steeple in England, and magnificent. At least 13 original copies of 1215 Magna Carta were issued at the Royal Chancery at the time. They were sent to county sheriffs and bishops who made more copies and ensured the provisions were understood by the populations. You only handle these with gloves. Can you imagine? 800-year-old document. The original charters were written on vellum or calf leather sheets using quill pens and abbreviated Latin. Each was sealed with a royal seal using beeswax and resin, most of which has not survived, of course. The 63 numbered clauses of Magna Carta were introduced by Sir William Blackstone in 1759, and the original charters formed a single long unbroken text, so he broke them up into 63 points. Listen to what William Blackstone, one of the greatest authorities on law in England, said. So great, moreover, is the regard of the law for private property that it will not authorize the least violation of it, no, not even for the general good of the whole community. Civilization is built on respect for property. And so any society that justifies the stealing of property, what they can call nationalization or expropriation, they are unraveling the whole fabric of civilization and industry. No enactment of man can be considered law unless it conforms to the law of God. Now, what William Blackstone said is so fundamentally true. Any law of man that's not founded and rooted and faithful to the law of God is no law at all. It's got no foundation, no basis. If law does not reflect God's law, God's eternal law, it isn't law at all. So when you write law, I trust you follow the principle of when you speak about God's law, you use a capital L. When you speak about man's law, you use a small L. Very important to distinguish it. And here you've got an original sword used at Runnymede. The wood handle has rotted away, but it still reminds one of how law and sword work together. Because the knights were there to preserve justice and to defend the defenseless and to stand for what is right. The four original 1215 charters were on joint display at the British Library in 1215 to mark the 800th anniversary of Magna Carta. And it was under massive protection, huge pomp and ceremony received, and this must have been a security nightmare. Lincoln Cathedral's original copy of the 1215 Magna Carta was being displayed at the World Fair in New York when the Second World War broke out, and spent the war years in Fort Knox, which is America's most secure facility, I guess. Prime Minister Winston Churchill attempted to gift the charter to the American government, hoping it would encourage the USA, then neutral, apparently, to enter the war. But Lincoln Cathedral refused to hand over the rights to such a precious heritage. Who did Winston Churchill think he was? This did not belong to the British government. It wasn't for the British Prime Minister to dispense. This belonged to Lincoln Cathedral. Had he not even read what Magna Carta is talking about? The inviolability of property and of the church, you know, really. Only one exemplification of the 1216 Charter of Henry III survives, and it's held in Durham Cathedral. Now, Durham Cathedral is impressive. The Bishop of Durham was always known as the Prince Bishop, and he had his own army, his own taxes. In fact, William the Conqueror just left Durham alone. I mean, it was more than the Vikings could handle. Durham was so powerful that for many centuries they just ruled themselves without any regard to the English king. They were a power to themselves, and it's built like a castle, and it is a castle. And I've been to Durham Cathedral, and let me tell you, you would not want to try to get in the way of these people. This is the bishop's house, by the way. Yeah. And in Durham Cathedral, which is very, very impressive, they have got one of the original 1216s. This is the 1216, Henry III, Magna Carta, 1216. Four copies of the 1217 chart exist, and three of these are held in Bodleian Library in Oxford, three at Hereford Cathedral. So, the red are charter towns, the blue are Magna Carta original copies are held there, and the green outline is for Magna Carta later versions, such as up in Durham. So, Lincoln and Salisbury are two of the originals being kept, and of course, City of London has as well. The Australian government has a 1297 charter, that's Edward I charter, on display in the Members' Hall of Parliament House, Canberra. That directly in the centre. It's the foundation, rather than the Australian flag, the foundation of Australian Parliament is Magna Carta. And you get there closer, what is it pointing to? What is the flagpole right over? Magna Carta is in the basement. This is the entire architecture of the Australian Parliament is telling you this is our foundation. And interestingly, here it is in the crypt. I was in Australia in 1218 on a speaking tour, and on a Saturday morning I joined a bunch of pro-lifers for an outreach outside the local abortuary, and in about half an hour, two Australian policemen pitched up and said, you know, I'm going to have to ask you to move along. So the pastor, who is my host, said, why? What law have you broken? He said, no, you haven't broken any law, but I'm asking you to move along. So he said, but why? We haven't broken the law. He said, well, I've had some complaints from the people inside. And so he said, well, they're killing babies in there. And the policeman said, that's not my concern. They are saying that you are interfering with their clients. And he said, well, we're doing street evangelism. We're sharing the gospel. And yes, we are telling the people that they're killing babies in there. So he says, well, if you don't move, I'll have you arrested. So again, my host pastor says, but why? What law have we broken? He said, no, you haven't broken the law, but if you don't move, I'll arrest you. On what charge? Refusing to obey the lawful command of a police officer. So At this point, the pastor says, are you aware that abortion is still against the law in Queensland? Like Brisbane is in Queensland. They haven't legalized abortion. It's been done, but the law on the statute book still forbids abortion. The policeman raises his hands and said, that's above my pay grade. And he continues to write a ticket. So I said at this point, Magna Carta guarantees the right to freedom of religion. What we're doing here is sidewalk evangelism. And he says, Magna Carta has nothing to do with Australian law. I said, why is your parliament built over a 1297 example of it? And why don't you just have major celebrations in 1215 on the entire Australian assembled governors and all the governors came together over this place to celebrate, this is the foundation of Australian law and government. And I quoted the whole lot. And he said, you don't have an Australian accent. Where do you come from? I said, South Africa. He said, give me your passport. Hand over my British passport. And he says, you're not allowed to take part in demonstration. I said, this isn't a demonstration, this is an outreach. Nevertheless, I said, but the first principle of Magna Carta is the church shall have its rights inviolable. If you take part in any other demonstration or outreach while you're in Australia, you will be deported. I said, did you notice that's a British passport? We have the same Queen Australia's. You're a constitutional monarchy, just as Great Britain. This is part of the Commonwealth. How could a Commonwealth citizen, a subject of the Queen, not be allowed to have the same religious liberties in Australia they can have in England? You're a foreigner. You take part in demonstration or outreach here, I'll have you deported. And he took down my details. So that is a classic example of what's going on. These are not the bobbies. These are not policemen. These are now gendarmes from France. French revolutionaries, you're guilty to prove it innocent. I'm the official. I'm just telling you, I'm making up law on the spot. And I don't care what the foundations are or what's right and wrong. You know, they're killing babies in there. That's not my concern. And so on. That is where police are, and it didn't surprise me a few years later that policemen like that one were beating up grannies, spraying mace in people's faces for not wearing masks and for defying lockdowns and protesting against government tyranny. Because if you don't want to be governed by God, you will be ruled by tyrants. And I think Australia is just, who would have thought Australia would go back to being prison island? The National Archives in Washington, D.C. has a copy of the 1297 Charter. But Australia's got an original. So 1215, there's major celebrations around the world for Magna Carta. Oh, if only they could have just considered the implications of what they were celebrating, that would have been outstanding. But the historians and the lawmakers and the lawyers alike were all unified in saying Magna Carta is the most important legal document in history. So much so that under Queen Elizabeth's sponsorship, the British Postal Service published principles of Magna Carta on their postage stamps, that excessive bail ought not to be required, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. Bill of Rights, 1689. No person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, American Bill of Rights, 1791. All putting Magna Carta, foundation of liberty. On the Postal Service. I mean, I don't know if the British government and people know what justice and liberty is anymore, considering they've had their right to self-defense taken away, the right to life of preborn babies taken away, right to breathe free oxygen, to go where you want. I mean, amazing what could have been done during the lockdown lunacy and salvation by vaccination spree. But nevertheless, they did produce some nice coins and tremendous memorabilia of the 800th anniversary of Magna Carta. And here are the principles, again, church, ministry of Ministry of Grace, Ministry of Justice, holding the king to account. That would be nice if people thought of Magna Carta and the Bill of Rights during the lockdown lunacy and all excessive abolition and suspension of your Bill of Rights, your freedom of worship, freedom of conscience, freedom of movement, freedom of thought, freedom of press, all of these freedoms just taken away. Bodily integrity, shut up, take this jab, who knows what's in it, doesn't matter. Just trust the government. We know what's good for you. We know better than you. But all the same, here you've got a Whitechapel Magna Carta bell, 1215 to 2015. Children's programs as well. Young Person's Guide to 800 Years and a Fight for Freedom. Well, I'd say the fight for freedom suffered a very serious defeat in 2020. And we need to take back our freedoms. But interestingly enough, even Ascension Island was putting out in 1215 Magna Carta points. And here you've got it, four examples of Magna Carta in one place in the British Library. Major security nightmare. I mean, these are such valuable documents. Their security was so great. There was some imbecile at Salisbury Cathedral tried to smash in and steal a Magna Carta. He was smashing away. Alarms went off. He couldn't even star the glass. I mean, they got some pretty serious armored glass there. At any rate, they do know how to protect these examples. If they'd only protect the principles enshrined in these documents as well, we would be in a much better world. Magna Carta. Events, Westminster Abbey, Westminster Hall, and all kinds of celebrations, but most importantly, at Runnymede. Can you imagine the size, the amount of people who want to come together at Runnymede for this event? Royals, military, Americans, British. There's the American flag and the British flag together. You'd think there'd never been a War of Independence, the way they worked together. And the royals came, and the palace guards, major, major celebrations to mark this anniversary on the 15th of June in 2015. The Duke of Cambridge was there, and a lot of jurors, the Aussies were there, and the Royal Air Force. Very spectacular celebration, all of Magna Carta. This should just remind us of the foundations of law and justice. It's not surprising that Pope Innocent III reacted with hostility to Magna Carta and attempted to annul it. The Inquisition was being established on the continent with corpus juris, while a church in England was establishing habeas corpus and trial by jury. To those who think Magna Carta is only a matter of distant interest for historians, Britain's membership of the European Union threatened to undermine our chartered rights as Englishmen. As you know, the European Parliament is literally built in a deliberate threat to reconstitute Babel, Europe, many tongues, one voice. I mean, this is what they're saying. And they deliberately modeled the Parliament on the Tower of Babel, even with the scaffolding incomplete. Brussels is still attempting to create a unified European criminal code which would abolish trial by jury, habeas corpus, and other safeguards entrenched in Magna Carta. More influenced by the Papal Inquisition and Napoleonic corpus juris, if allowed to progress unchecked, a European Union prosecutor could issue European warrants which could violate the foundation stones of British freedoms established in Magna Carta. So the EU is really Babel, globalism, New World Order. Should you help the wicked and love those who hate the Lord, therefore the wrath of the Lord is upon you. Brexit was a good move in the right direction. Anything that moves against the EU's totalitarian centralization, it's bad. And so Britain reasserting its sovereignty was a good thing. As Marine Le Pen has said in France, the European Union is not Europe. It is an ideology without land. It is without people, without roots, without a soul, without civilization. The European Union is slowly killing millennial nations. And there's a lot of groups from Netherlands, France, Italy, all over Europe. You see new groups rising up opposing the EU globalism. Most Christians do not seem to understand that we are in a war. It's a war of ideas and of loyalties. It's a battle for the mind, and you either give your allegiance to God or to Satan. The world is a battlefield. Unfortunately, most Christians are failing to renew their minds, don't understand how the humanist worldviews conflict with biblical worldview. You see the distress we're in, how Jerusalem lies waste and its gates are burned with fire. Come, let us rebuild the walls of Jerusalem that we might not be a reproach. Be very careful in how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. Unless the Lord builds the house, they who labor in vain who build it. Unless the Lord guards the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. Stand fast, therefore, in the liberty by which Christ has made us free, and do not be entangled again with the yoke of bondage. For you, brethren, have been called to liberty. Only do not use liberty as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another. So that is Magna Carta. I've got on the table there a newsletter we wrote on the anniversary, the 800th anniversary of Magna Carta. So the notes of the text of what I've shared tonight is available if you want to share it with others. It's on our ReformationSA.org website as well, ReformationSA.org. And this has been based on a number of books that we've got, including in our library, of the different great principles, the Glorious Revolution, 1688, how Christianity changed the world. It's in our church history manual, a lot of the principles and biblical principles, faithful, which is also Afrikaans and French as well. So, principles of Ten Commands. Any questions, any comments on Magna Carta, foundations for justice and freedom? Questions, comments, complaints? Yes.
Does the Magna Carta apply to South Africa because of our laws are made from English laws?
Magna Carta certainly should be relevant, and we should be able to appeal to it, but for us it would be more of a historical and logical application, whereas in England, Australia, Canada, it's actually written into their law that that's foundational, and so they can appeal to it more directly. We would appeal to it more indirectly. It certainly is foundational for all good law, but I don't know how many of our secular humanist Marxist orientated characters would like to appeal to that. Anthony, let's ask you, when you've been studying law, do they give attention to Magna Carta?
Not much. Maybe just in history a little bit, taking knowledge of the different foreign origins of laws, because our laws both in the Roman Dutch and English law.
So they give more attention to Roman and Dutch?
Roman, Dutch, and English.
So, but if they speak of English law, they've got to speak about the doings of Alfred.
Just the process.
And Magna Carta.
So procedures come from England, but our content comes from the Roman Dutch.
Do you see much overlap, or is there divergence? When they're coming to Roman Dutch, how much does it line up with these principles of English law that I've mentioned from Magna Carta?
I think it's, insofar as many of the principles have a biblical foundation, they all of these overlap.
The big danger is that in many countries, like in Europe, they have the French concept that you're guilty till proven innocent. The state has the authority, and you've got the burden of proof to prove you're not innocent. They have less of a burden. The assumption is you're guilty and you've got to prove your innocence. Whereas in the English system of Magna Carta, you're innocent until they can prove you're guilty. Now, I don't know how much that's been violated these days, but it seemed that in the lockdown, for example, there was a presumption of guilt. If you're not wearing a mask, if you're not vaccinated, if you're not practicing social distancing, you're guilty. So it seemed like they'd suspended our Bill of Rights, and suddenly the state could tell you that you're guilty, and you didn't even have the opportunity to prove your innocence. So it seems that they violated our whole Bill of Rights right there.
Yeah, they did when they declared the state of emergency.
And the state of emergency, in my understanding, the Bill of Rights is meant to apply even during a state of emergency. Because my understanding was, no law is valid if it violates any of the principles of the Bill of Rights. But they somehow seem to just brush that aside. Surely that wasn't the intention when the Bill of Rights was first written?
Yeah, in terms of the Bill of Rights, in fact, there are limitations, and with the state of emergency, they're entitled to place further limitations.
But my understanding also is the state of emergency could only be called in the face of a natural disaster or a state of war, and then only for 3 weeks. And if it's to be extended, Parliament must agree to that. But they never let Parliament meet for almost 2 years. So there's a lot of inconsistencies here. But I think some of that will come out. I see that there's a lot of lawsuits going on in America right now against whole companies and airlines for having forced people on these masks and so on, which they actually had no legal right to do. And I don't know how they could justify states of emergencies that just carry on and on. Because constitutionally, it's just meant to be limited to 3 weeks. And Parliament never actually sat to debate or authorise this.
That's right. I mean, the American Constitution is supreme, or supposed to be.
Hmm.
But the actions now being taken that violate But if anything violates that constitution, it's null and void.
I would have thought.
And yet, you know, and yet it's been done. And the breakdown of, I mean, you can have this Magna Carta, you can have all the most excellent laws and things like that, but they've been shredded. So it's not enough just to have good laws.
Yes. Yes. Law can be helpful as a good, solid foundation, but you've got to build things on it.
I think, I mean, the thing about resistance and so on, I mean, you don't remain free if there's not this resistance and this, the courage to resist. You know, because it's inevitable that people of the tyrannical nature are going to rise, and I don't think it's ever been as dangerous as it is now globally.
Yeah. It is. It's very foundational. Just to think, right now, your rights to everything. They want to crush your freedom of speech and they move, well, that's hate speech, or that offends somebody, or we don't like that, or that's fake news. Well, who says? How about iron sharpening iron and the free marketplace of ideas to discuss? But they're just like, no, you can't say that, and you're not allowed to say that, and you must wear a mask. And for example, during the lockdown, I was part of a march, we were marching part to protest against mandatory masks. And the police come there with their riot shields and so on, tell us you've got to wear masks during this protest. But we're protesting against the masks. That seems very inconsistent. And I said, I've got a medical condition, I've got to breathe oxygen. And they wouldn't let us move, so we had to have our protest there and then because we couldn't march to Poland. But the intriguing thing is also, I brought out, but according to the law on protest, 1996 law on protest, it is an offence to take part in any protest action wearing a face mask or any other anything that obscures your facial features, obviously for identification and accountability if you do damage and break laws and crimes. So, and they said, no, but Parliament's changed that. And I said, they can't have, they haven't sat since March 2020. So how could they have passed a law passing away the 1996 legislation? Anyway, it still stands. It is illegal in South Africa to take part in any protest action with anything obscuring your facial features, such as a mask. But they're just like, well, forget about that. And your freedom of conscience and other things like, if you've got a medical condition that requires you to breathe oxygen. So we are having all sorts of things just violate, like all churches closed. You can't gather for church, not even Easter, 2020, things like that. So everything, freedom of conscience, freedom of worship, freedom of religion, freedom of movement, even freedom of the press. They wouldn't even allow the press to be taking pictures in some places. They're cracking down. And the police and army were shooting people in the first few days of the lockdown, including journalists who are identifying themselves as journalists. Unreal. Other comments? Yes.
Yeah, quite fascinating presentation. I learned a lot. I'm thinking around issues of the human rights in South Africa, particularly, how criminality has been condoned, in my understanding,
yes.
Issues of rights. Does that apply to Magna Carta? You know, I come from a country where crime is being handled with seriousness. Right here, you find heinous crime committed by criminals, and they're given bail. 2-3 months or a few days,
yeah.
And they go back to commit the crime and the Bill of Rights. So, where is the place of this right?
Justice.
You know, justice and the rest, where you have to bring, if I mean, I'm going to judge a rapist. I have to bring a rapist to stay in the jury from because of Magna Carta. How does that speak to the rights of the victim?
Yeah.
So, I'm just
looking at that. Yes, no, Magna Carta was not soft on crime. It was hard on the capricious rulers abusing their power, and the fact that a king could just say to the judge, offer this head or something, and the man was lost. But they might be able to have a state official who's corrupt, but the chance of having a jury of the man's peers, of his own neighbors and so on, to all be corrupted was less. And so these were safeguards. Of course, not like a jury can't be rigged as well. That does happen, even now, even in America. But still, generally speaking, you've got more chance with a trial by jury of getting justice there. And there have been cases where the jury has all decided, no, this law's not fair. And they've dismiss the charge against man, which you've got the right to do, by the way, when they think it's an unjust law. So, yes, South Africa is run by criminals, and that's why they're soft on crime. And that is bad, because I think almost anywhere in Africa there's a sense of the criminal is really bad, and you've got to deal with this, and you can't tolerate crime, and so they're harsher on dealing with crime. But in this country, it's as though, well, you know that the government's made up of criminals, so they're very soft on crime, which is very hard on normal, law-abiding people who are the victims. There's a question back?
Yes. Did King John attempt to disarm the barons?
I can't think that that would have worked, because there's no way the people then would have ever been willing to be disarmed. So I don't know that he could have, and yet, in Magna Carta, there is a clause that you may not disarm any man, that you cannot infringe any man's right to bear arms. That's in there. It's even in the dooms of King Alfred and the laws of Canute, which comes between them, that it is illegal to attempt to disarm a man. And however, it also says a person who draws a sword in a meeting without cause is to be fined. So, you know, you weren't allowed to abuse your rights, but there was self-defense. Was taken for granted. I would have imagined that King John, what he was doing was, he's doing everything that Magna Carta says you shouldn't do. By the way, there's a lot against usury. Never even mentioned usury in this. There's a lot of emphasis against charging of interest by bankers. Just straight for Borden. Don't even think about it. Usury was banned in England for centuries. Which, by the way, according to Stephen Mitford Goodson, is why there was this absolute upsurge in building cathedrals, because people had so much spare time. When there was no usury, people's tax was so low, and they didn't have to be paying back interest to the bankers, that people only had to work about 140 days a year, so they had something like 220 days holiday a year, and they were building cathedrals all over the place, going berserk. They had extra time and had extra money, because taxes were so low, and there was no usury. And that's an interesting thing, that the heyday of building cathedrals, the 12th, 13th, 14th centuries, were times when there was no usury allowed, and the bankers were, well, they were basically forbidden. You couldn't charge interest, simple. And that was a good thing. So King John was being attacked on everything that he was doing wrong. So Magna Carta protects everything he was threatening, which included the right to keep arms, have arms, be protected. But moving on, trying to stop people from being armed didn't work very well in England. There's all these barons that owned castles, and they had their own knights and weapons, so, you know, foolish point. And even King John signed in Magna Carta, which, by the way, every monarch of England at the coronation has to swear to uphold Magna Carta and all the laws of God and govern in the according to the gospel of Christ. You know, this is part of the coronation oath. But part of it was that if the king violates any point of Magna Carta or any of his heirs, the barons are obligated to resist militarily and force them at the point of the sword back to path of justice. Now, this is why in America they can impeach a president. It's a good principle. Other comments, questions? Yes.
There are laws that are made, you know, before you were born, which may have been used nicely in those days where grandpa was paying rates and taxes at a reasonable rate. So maybe he let that law go, and was a time when the government was doing good things and building infrastructure. But now you never signed up for that law. You don't agree with it, because when in your time of living on this earth, rates and taxes are extortionists. So how can older people and previous generations be allowed to make laws that affect us, and that suddenly you might end in jail for something that you never agreed with in the first place?
Yeah, no, it's gotten absolutely outrageous, and the theft is so huge. Just take the fact of now the fuel tax. How many people realize that the government is getting more out of every litre of fuel you buy than the oil producing company, the oil company, and the petrol station combined? Literally. Hey, it's just insane.
Is that worldwide, though?
I don't know if it's worldwide.
Every country that
you're okay. What's the cost of fuel in England? Ryan, you've just been passed in?
£9.
Per litre?
Per gallon.
£9 per gallon. By the way, the cost of fuel is bad here. You don't want to try the cost of fuel anywhere in Europe to compare.
So is this not connected to all the World Economic Forum.
Yes, oh, totally. This is Agenda 21. This is Agenda 2030. To hike the price of fuel up.
Yeah.
Remember, under Donald Trump, the average price of fuel was under $2 a gallon.
Under $2, yes.
Yeah, and so it's been more than doubled, almost trebled in some parts of America under Biden. And that's, Biden said he would raise it. You see, this is what the Green New Deal and the globalist and World Economic Forum want. They want to basically outlaw private transport. So by bringing the price of fuel up, they're trying to force people to take public transport, which the government can control more, get people away from private transport. They also want to get people to move away from rural living. They want to basically make farmers extinct. They want to get everyone into urban settlement areas where you can be easier controlled and spied on, of course. That's important. Anything that makes you independent is against Agenda 21. So Agenda 21 is claiming, in the name of saving the climate and the ecology, they want a globalist world welfare state where everyone is dependent on the state for everything. That's the Agenda 21. That's so what's going on now is not misgovernment, it's not foolishness, it's not stupidity, it's a deliberate evil plan to strip people of freedom.
So is it a case of treason?
Oh, definitely. I mean, this is treason on a high order. Yeah. And that's why Charles the First was put on trial for treason in England. He waged war against his people. He violated Magna Carta. And the point is, a king or president can commit treason against certain people. So let's consider consider the possibility that their governments or globalists who planned a pandemic, and manufactured a virus that's super contagious in some Chinese biological warfare laboratory and funded it, and knowingly spread it in order to enact rules and laws that could crush their people, suspend or take away their freedoms, so that they could restructure society in a great reset. What would you call that?
Yeah.
I mean, that's serious treason. That's beyond treason.
The highest treason. It's in fact the fact that all these laws are great, but the problem is you can't even take these people to court. Yeah. Particularly in the States, I mean, that legal system is absolutely rotten all the way through. So the justice has been overturned. Now, where are we now?
Indeed. Yeah. We need decent people. We need good people in law. That's why I'm glad you've got some people who have been studying law, because the fact is, you know, as we've said, 95% of lawyers give the rest a bad name. But we need Christians in every area of life. We need the William Blackstones and the James Cooks of the past, the people who are going to come in and bring some salt and light in this area. Just like we need Christian businessmen. We need Christian scientists and Christian sportsmen. We need Christians in every area of life. We need Christian filmmakers making decent films instead of this defiling dirt and garbage and brainwashing. So, yes, good laws are great, but you need honest people to apply them. Because right now we've got some very wicked, corrupt judges up there. Some of them might even think they're doing the right thing, but they're brainwashed. And they literally think that this way of reinterpreting constitution and so on is a good idea. And maybe they're even brainwashed to think the globalists have a good plan. And Klaus Schwab's trying to save the world. I mean, maybe somebody really believes that. But for most of them, I think they're corrupt. And some of you may have heard this presentation before. I've been asked to do it again, but we've got the 1666 and the Sabbatean roots of the New World Disorder. We've got these in the stand here. So important, if you don't understand Sabbateanism, you don't understand the New World Order, the New World Disorder, the cancel culture, BLM, Hollywood, UN, EU, the whole lot. It makes sense when you understand these people are not stupid. They are evil. And it's summarized here. Salvation comes through sin. Redemption is achieved through deception. That is the heart of Sabbateanism. These people, Luciferians, they are involved literally in the worship of Satan. And they are deliberately seeking to break every law of God. And if this doesn't make sense to one, then continue to think, how can they do this? How can they be so stupid? Well, a lot of these people aren't stupid. Many of them are deliberately seeking to break the economy, break the laws, brainwash the children. When you look how government's stealing from us, they're not just stealing through taxes, they're stealing through inflation. They're not just stealing through inflation, they're seeking to steal your children through indoctrination schools. They're trying to steal your soul, actually, when you get down to it. through so many debasing things, of just breaking down so much society, steal your heritage, steal your faith, steal your freedoms. What we're dealing with is a situation now where, in many cases, the law courts are there to deprive people of justice. And the schools are there to make you dumber. And the doctors are there to make you sicker. And the pharmaceutical companies are there to make you really sick. And in many cases, many pastors are there to teach you a false gospel and to lead you astray. So it's like every structure society has been undermined. And that's why we need reformation at its core. Why do we have a reformation society? Because there's so much that's wrong in society. And the solutions are the Bible, and we need to bring people back to the Word of God. And when we look at history like Magna Carta, we see, well, this is what made so much of civilization great. And it's violating and turning our backs on it that's made our society in the chaotic shambles of the mess that it's in right now. But I've got hope for the future, because the fact is, the Word of God is the power of God for salvation of everyone that believes. And God is more powerful than all these forces, and I've got every expectation that He's going to frustrate the plans of the wicked. Psalm 2, why do the nations rage? Why do the kings of this plot together against the Lord and against the Anointed One? The Lord and the throne in heaven laughs. I mean, do they really think they can beat the King of Kings, the Creator, the Eternal Judge? They haven't got a hope. But in the meantime, God is allowing these crises to train and shape and purge and purify His people and make His people more prayerful and more powerful and effective and practical. So God can work all things together for good for those who love Him and are called according to His purpose. God is able to take what man means for evil and use it for good. So even these evil things ultimately will make the church stronger. It'll come out of this better.